Okay, so we are in Gehenna. That's where we're starting off. In the middle of Gehenna over here. So remember, again, just to focus a little bit on what we were speaking about last time. So remember, again, Gehenna has this pasuk that it quotes from Tehillim. We were trying to understand, ultimately, again, some of the nature of Gehenna. What exactly is the role of Gehenna? So we saw, based on the Gemaras, that Gehenna is the place, on a very simple level, where there is the accounting for all of your wrongful deeds. The person commits averos, and the person commits mitzvos, and Gehenna ultimately, again, is where there is accounting for the averos that are committed. I want to show you a little bit of a different approach with this. Take a look at number 6 on your sheet. So the Gemara says as follows, V'ar, b'matzei Shabbos. You see here, I'm kind of picking up in the middle of the discussion about the creation of fire. Specifically, again, when was fire created? So the Gemara quotes a couple of different opinions. At this point, the Gemara is assuming that our fire was created on Matzei Shabbos. So the Gemara says, is that true? That fire was created on Matzei Shabbos? V'hatanya, asara dvarim nivru be'erev Shabbos ben hashmashos. The Gemara says that there were 10 things that were created erev Shabbos ben hashmashos. Remember again, ben hashmashos is when? We call it twilight, right? So the period, again, on a halachic level, it's the period that has a little bit of ambiguity. Is it day? Is it night? Is it maybe a mixture of the two? Halachos of both? Halachos of neither? So from a halachic perspective, ben hashmashos is exceptionally ambiguous. See, here the Gemara is saying there are 10 things that are created ben hashmashos. What were they? Eluhain, Be'er, which we assume refers to which well? The well of Miriam. Good. Man, Keshes, the rainbow, Ksav, Michtov, Luchos, Kivos, Shal Moshe. So we're going to go through this whole, I'm not going to spend too much time on this. Ma'ara Shabbat Moshe Eliyahu, Psichas Pia Ason, Psichas Pia Aretz Livnas HaRishayim. So interestingly enough, these are the 10 things that were created on Bin Hashmash. So again, we have the Be'er of Miriam, the Man, the rainbow, script, writing, a stylus with which to write, the Luchos, the grave of Moshe, the cave in which Moshe and Eliyahu stood, the opening, the literally it means the opening of the mouth of the donkey, referring to who? Or referring to what? Bilam's donkey, right? Psichas pi arz of the Asar Hashem, opening of the earth to swallow up, Korach and his followers, Rabbi Nechemya Omer Shem Aviv Af Ha'or V'Haperet. Rabbi Nechemya says that even fire, Pered is a mule. Lo kasha. So the point, just on what I want you to focus on, is as follows. So the Gemara is operating with the approach that fire was created on Matzei Shabbos. Then the Gemara quotes a differing opinion that says fire was created ben hashmashos. Ben hashmashos of when? When the Gemara says ben hashmashos, which ben hashmashos are we referring to?
Friday.
So it's a stira, it's a contradiction. Was fire created on Matzei Shabbos, or was fire created on Friday Eve, we'll call it. To which the Gemara says, Lo kasha, it's not a contradiction. Ha ba'ar di dan, ha ba'ar di gehenim. The Gemara is referring to two different fires. One is the fire that we have in this world, fire. And the other refers ultimately, again, to the fires of Gehenim. What's the distinction? Ar di dan b'matzei Shabbos. Our fire was created on Matzei Shabbos. Ar di gehenim b'erev Shabbos. Ultimately, again, the fire of Gehenim was created on Erev Shabbos. So now, what I want to point out is something very interesting. So, why was the fire of Gehenna created on Erev Shabbos? Why was, so essentially, when we say fire, Gehenna was created on Erev Shabbos. Why? Excellent. Because remember, think about this in just a moment. If you look at the list of the 10 things which were created, Shabbos ben Hashmashos, some of them, not all of them, are fundamentally related to sin, right? The kever of Moshe is related to sin. Why? Moshe Rabbeinu's kever was where? In the Midbar. Why is it in the Midbar? Because ultimately, again, he made the mistake of hitting the rock, right? He's not allowed to enter Israel. The Psichas Pia Ason is Bilam disobeying God. The opening of the land is Korach disobeying God. So a lot of these things that are being created over here are fundamentally rooted in the chait of Adam and Chava, which occurs, remember, on Yom HaShishi, on the sixth day of creation, on Friday. So essentially what the Gemara seems to be saying is as follows. When the HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, so to speak, was supposed to operate a certain way. Adam and Chava sin, and they sin pretty early on in their existence. That fundamentally changes the fabric of creation to the point that now, in the twilight hours of Friday going into Shabbos, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to create a whole new bunch of things that are reflective of man's sinful nature. Almost as if, as a result of Adam and Chava's sin, HaKadosh Baruch Hu kiviyachol has like a new insight into the persona and behavior of man. I thought they were going to be up here. They're not going to be up here. They're going to be down here. So therefore, the Bria needs to accommodate the new reality of man. So using that logic, I'd also understand why Gehenim was also created on Erev Shabbos Ben Hashmashos. Same idea. What's Gehenim? Gehenim is the place, ultimately, again, where a person goes for the cathartic, rehabilitative punishment for their sins. The goal is, I go there to get cleansed. So it makes sense, when was that created? After Adam and Chava sinned. So fine, no problem here. But then the Gemara says something amazing. V'ar the Gehenim, Erev Shabbos Ivri? Is that true? That the fires of Gehenim were created on Erev Shabbos? It's not true. V'hatanya, we have a braisa. Shiva dvarim nivru kodem shenivra olam. There are seven things that were created before the world. So, which is amazing, because we often think that the beginning of the creative process was Bereshis Bar Elokim, Es HaShamayim VeEs. The first thing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created was Shamayim and Aretz. The Gemara says, no, there are things that were created before the world. What were they? Torah. Shroch created Torah before the world. Tshuva, Gan Eden, Gehenim, Kisei HaKavod, Beis HaMikdash, Ushmo Shel Mashiach. So the truth is, we could probably spend an entire semester just on this Gemara, because it's really quite amazing to see the things that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created even before He created a world. These are the things. What I want to draw your attention to is what's in this list? Gehenna. Right? Isn't this fascinating? That Gehenna is created even before HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the earth. So I understood, when you told me that Gehenna was created Ben Hashmashos, so what does that tell me? Why was Gehenna created? Right? Because man sinned. I mean, it's a reactionary creation. Man did something wrong. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, okay, now I have a new kind of kiviyachol, a new understanding into the nature of man. We have to accommodate this new reality. We'll create Gehenim. According to this bottom part of the Gemara, Gehenim is already created. When? It's already created before creation. Before there's an Adam and Chava. Before there's a Shemayim Vayis. Before there's anything. Which tells us that Gehenim must be something more. By the way, it's not just Gehenim. It's true for Gan Eden, Torah, Tshuva. Some of these things I understand. Why does Torah have to be created before the world? Because again, Torah is the blueprint. Right? Torah is the blueprint for everything. So I understand that. Tshuva itself also is also seems to be related. It's fascinating as well. But I want to focus you on Gehenim. Yes. Absolutely. Tshuva's there, 100%. So the question about Gehenim is not just Gehenim. I'm just focusing on Gehenim because we're in Gehenim. So, you know, we're gonna focus on. But yes, I mean, you could ask the same question on Tshuva. Even on Gan Eden, you could ask the same question. Based Shmo Shel Mashiach, which is also interesting, right? Because we often think that why is there Mashiach? Mashiach is a function of what? Galus. It sounds like from this Gemara that that's not the case. That there's a concept of Mashiach even without Galus. What does this mean? You know, this is almost like tied to the idea that maybe, you know, like the Gemara says that had Moshe Rabbeinu entered into Eretz Yisrael and built the Beis HaMikdash, that Beis HaMikdash would have never been destroyed. So like, what does that mean? Does that mean Moshe Rabbeinu would have been the Mashiach? So we often, I think, assume that a Mashiach almost, so to speak, would have been unnecessary. Mashiach is the antidote to Galus. Maybe that's the case. Maybe the Gemara is saying that Mashiach is, like I said, there's so much to see about this Gemara. I just want to draw your attention specifically to Gehenim. Yes?
Just a clarification on the Gemara. They brought in three, there's a machlokas about when Gehenim was created.
Correct.
Matzah Shabbos, Friday, Nesh Mashos, or before the world was created. And does it give answer or just
no, it's a machlokes. It's a machlokes. Remember, you can't usually have answers about things like this because essentially, as you've seen, you have competing midrashim or competing misoras. So the, as far as, I have to look again, but I don't believe that the Gemara ends off with a conclusion.
Maybe that's a good source for that. There's no Gehenim on Shabbos. Like it was created on our Shabbos and it was recreated.
Beautiful, on beautiful. Although it was, well, the truth, right.
It doesn't say you have Shabbos.
Right.
It was Barak created from something.
Beautiful. Beautiful. So that maybe that's where it comes from, right? It's almost like you have Gehenim on Erev Shabbos, Gehenim on Matzei Shabbos, but nothing on Shabbos. Beautiful. Beautiful. Yes?
So, but it's not even, but it's not a question, because one of them says the fire's Gehenim, and one of them says Gehenim. So maybe Gehenim was created before Hashem created the world, but didn't add the fire until the fire.
then you'd have to ask, then what is Gehenna without the fires? Meaning the fires represent the cathartic rehabilitative punishment. You want to posit that maybe there's a concept of Gehenna without the Eish.
I mean, that's what...
Maybe. I didn't think about it. It's an interesting deal. Maybe there's fires of Gehenna and Gehenna. Excellent point. I didn't think about that. All right, that's your homework.
People to go in Gehenna, there doesn't need to be fires to go in Gehenna either.
Right, but what's Gehenna without the fire? Maybe Gehenna without the fire is just not Olam Haba. I don't know. It's an excellent point. I didn't think about that. So that's actually, okay, so our topic is not tshuva, but there's a whole body of literature about the concept of tshuva independent of sin. There is a concept, and we know this, there's a concept of, you know, whether what we'll call like a tshuva me'ava. Tshuva me'ava is the type of, with much more involved, but can actually be a process of spiritual growth, not in response to sin. Which, by the way, goes back to what we were saying before, because I think it's the same way that often we think tshuva is a response to sin. Mashiach is a response to galus. It could really be what the Gemara is introducing us is that some of these concepts that we see them as antidotal concepts, right? They address a problem, perhaps are standalone concepts as well. All right, maybe we'll find the opportunity to come back to this Gemara. But what I just want you to take from this is that Gehenna, at least according to one opinion, is created before there's a world. Remember again, the common denominator amongst the first two opinions of Erev Shabbos or Matzeh Shabbos is I could see the Gehenna sin connection. This Gemara is quite dramatic because then what it's saying is Gehenna serves, well, here's what I think it's saying. Gehenna serves a purpose in addition to punishment. In other words, up until now we've been focusing as Gehenna as a model for punishment. Why do you go to Gehenna? Why do you go to Gehenna? Ultimately, again, to get to cathartic rehabilitation for your sins. Not punitive, because we don't believe in punitive punishment, but it's the place where you go to get rehabilitated, atonement, and cleansed from your averos. That works beautifully if Gehenna is created in response to chet. But if Gehenna is kind of like a self-standing entity that is created even before the world, it could very well be that there's a different purpose to Gehenna as well. So take a look at number 8. So this is an incredible Gemara Maseches Brachos. This is what we're going to spend, I think, the rest of our time on today. So the Gemara says, this Gemara, I used to, in past years, I used to do Pirkei Avos for this class instead of Erek Shira. And we used to probably spend, I would say, a good month on Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. We would use the Mishnah from Pirkei Avos as the springboard. But Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is a fascinating personality. Fascinating. And his foresight, because remember, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai lives at the time of the Churban. So his foresight and his wisdom and his optimism is mamish what saved Klal Yisrael in some of the darkest chapters of our history. So look, so this is fast-forwarding a little bit to the end of his life. Number 8. Ukishachal Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai became ill. Nichnesu Talmidav Levakro. His students came in to go ahead and visit him. So by the way, I'll just say something interesting. You find this throughout the Gemara. You see, you would often assume a person is dying, they're on their deathbed. Who are they surrounded by?
Family.
Yet in the Gemara, you almost never see that. In the Gemara, when you have a great Tana or Amora dying, who are they surrounded by? Talmidim. Why? So first, it could be that their Talmidim are their family, but on a much simpler level. Remember, once upon a time, Torah Shebal Peh was Baal Peh. It was literally verbally transmitted, which meant that when someone died, any Torah that they did not give over went with them to the grave. So you see this incredible dynamic. It's so incredible that the Talmidim are surrounding the deathbed and they're almost like, they're like trying to extract as much information as they can before their death. Remember, who is the most dramatic example of this? Of someone giving over of a luminous amount of information in his final hours?
Moshe.
So Moshe Rabbeinu, that's true. Who else? Rabbi Akiva did it also. Who else? Yaakov Avinu, Rashbi. Right? Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai is one of the greatest recorded examples we have of this. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai is the one who gives us what we call the Idra Zutra, Idra, meaning Zohar. When did he give that over? That was all given over on his deathbed. all given, I mean, he did not teach that. He did not teach Torah Hanistar during his lifetime. He literally gave that all over. In fact, you know, that the Zohar brings down, that's one of the miracles that occurred. As Rav Shimon Bar Yochai said, I will not let the sun set until I go ahead and give over all the Torah I have to, because he knew he was going to die that day. So the Zohar says he commanded the sun not to set until he finished giving over Idra Rabba, Idra Zuta, the two primary parts of the Zohar, which is why the minag on Lag BaOmer is one of the reasons we light a bonfire on Lag BaOmer, is to go ahead and commemorate the miracle of light into the night. The Rav Shimon Bar Yochai did not allow the sun to set, so we bring kiviyachol light into the night as well to remember that miracle. So that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is dying. By the way, whenever the Gemara says chala, chala doesn't just mean he has the sniffles. Chala usually means that he's on his deathbed. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is dying. Nichnesu talmidim levakro. The students come in to do bigger cholim. So this is an incredible Gemara. Kevan shira osam is chalifkos. As soon as he sees his talmidim, he begins to cry. So you have to understand something. For the talmidim to see their Rebbe cry was a very jarring experience. Now again, I don't know Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's emotional disposition. Some people are more outwardly emotive, and some people cry easily and often. I don't know if Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was or was not. The point over here is when he's on his deathbed, the Talmidim are very taken, almost like astounded to see him cry. You'll see why. Amr lo, Talmidim of Neri Yisrael, Amot Hayemini, right? The fire of Israel, the Amot Hayemini, the right pillar, Patish Achazak, the strong hammer, meaning they're giving him chizuk. Mipnei ma'ata bocha. So they thought that he was crying. Why? Because he was scared to die. That's why they thought he was crying, that he was scared about dying. So they give him chizuk. Rebbe, you're so strong, you're so special. Then they saw Modei Amini Patish Achazak. Why are you crying? So look at your eyes. Amar lahem, ilu lifnei melech basar vadah ilu malichin osim. Shayom Khan Ubama Umachar Bekever. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says like this, you know, if I was being taken for judgment in front of a human king who is alive today and tomorrow could be dead, Shim Koi Salai in Kaso Kasalam. If he gets angry at me, his anger is not eternal. Vimosrani in Yisur Surolam, and if he incarcerates me, it's not incarceration forever. Vimimisani, and if he kills me, Ain misasum misasum. He doesn't have the ability to execute me forever. Va'ani yachol lefaisa b'dvarim u'lashachto b'mamon. And I could bribe him. I could bribe him with words. I could bribe him with money. Afa pikin ayisibocha. Would I not be afraid to face him in judgment? Achshav shemolichin osedifnei melech ma'achai amach ma'akodesh baruchu. Shuchai v'kayom li'olam u'li'ome olamim. Now that I'm being brought for judgment in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who is eternal, Shim Koi Salai Kaso Kaso, if he gets angry at me, it could be forever. And if he incarcerates me, it's forever. And if he kills me, it could be forever. And I can't go ahead and bribe him. Now here we go. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is saying, what is he saying? He's saying ultimately, again, I am afraid of facing HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's not that I'm afraid to die. It's not that death is the scary experience. I'm afraid to face God, because facing God is dramatic. Not only that, here we go. V'lo'od, Ella, Shiyesh Lefonai Shnei Drachim. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, there are two pathways ahead of me. Achos Shel Gan Eden, V'achos Shel Gehenom. One path leads to Gan Eden, one path leads to Gehenom. V'aini Yodea Be'ezo Molichim Osi. Can you imagine these words? Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, I don't know which path I'm going to be led down. And should I not cry? So you understand the profundity of this incredible Gemara, right? Meaning, what's happening over here? First of all, the Gemara happens to end off in a beautiful way. The Gemara says, Amar lo Rabbeinu bar Chinu, Rabbi, bless us. And what does he say? Amar lahem, Yiratzon shetemor sham aleichem kemora basar vadam. He gives him an interesting bracha. You should fear God as much as you fear man. Amar lo tamid of Ad Kan, Rabbi, that's it. Right, that's the bracha. We should fear God as much as we fear man. Shouldn't we fear God much more than we fear man? Amar lahem halavai. Halavai, you should fear God as much as you fear another human being. Teidu, kisha adam over avera omer shlo yirani adam. Ultimately, again, when he says, you know, when a person commits an avera, what is a person most preoccupied with? That's what? No one should see me. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees. So you see that I'm much more concerned, I might have a much greater fear of people than a fear of God. So the Gemara is off, B'shas Pitirasa, when he died, Amar Lahem, Penu Kelim Mipnei Atoma, V'achinu Kise L'chizkiyo Melech Yehuda Sheba. So this is amazing. So what happens? As he's about to die, he gives the order, remove all of the utensils from the home. What happens when you have a corpse inside of a home? Right, everything becomes that. It's called Tumas Ohel. Right, Tumas Ohel, anything under the same roof as a corpse becomes Tameh. Why does he add, tell him to remove the earthenware vessels and not anything else? Because you can't kasher it. Excellent. Remember again, earthenware vessels, once they become Tameh, there's nothing you could do for them. Other utensils have the ability to undergo a Tara process. So he says, remove the earthenware utensils and prepare a chair for Chizkiyo. So let's talk about this in just a moment. So there are two astounding things about this Gemara. What's the most astounding about this Gemara? The most astounding thing?
He doesn't know where
that he doesn't know where he's going. Really? Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, they're like a chashash that you're going to Gehenna. I mean, you remember, understand, great people, let me say it differently, humility is often misunderstood. Humility doesn't mean thinking that you're a nothing. If a person thinks they're a nothing, what is that? That's low self-esteem, right? That's not humility, right? That's a lack of self-worth. That's actually very destructive and damaging. Humility means, I know who I am, and I know what I've accomplished, but I also know that I could be so much more. That's humility. That's how Moshe Rabbeinu, there was no, as the Torah says, right? No one was more honored, no one was more humble than Moshe, yet Moshe Rabbeinu had no problem saying to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if you don't forgive Klal Yisrael in the aftermath of the eagle, Mecheni na Mesifrecha Asher Kasaf, erase me. Wow, that's a pretty, that's like you're essentially threatening HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Either do what I say or erase me from your Torah. Moshe Rabbeinu was exceptionally humble, but he also knew who he was. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is not sure, is he going to Gan Eden or is he going to Gehenna? Yet at the same time, when he's about to die, he asks to go ahead and have a chair prepared for whom? For none other than Chizkiyo Melech Yehuda. Right? Now, interestingly enough, who is Chizkiyo Melech Yehuda? Who is Chizkiyo? What does the Gemara say about Chizkiyo?
He could have been Mashiach.
So you know the story about Chizkiyo, right? Chizkiyo was supposed to be the Mashiach. Why wasn't he the Mashiach? What happens? He refused to marry. He refused to marry and have a family. Why did he refuse to marry and have children? God, because he saw the Ruach HaKodesh, that if he would have a son would be an incredible Rasha. So you remember the story. Remember, who's the Navi at the time of Chizkiyo? Yeshayo, right? Remember, Yeshayo and Chizkiyo do not get along with each other. So what happens? Chizkiyo is dying, essentially. So remember, for a while, Chizkiyo and Yeshayo didn't see each other. Why not? Because Chizkiyo said, I'm the Melech, the Navi should come to me. Right? Yeshayo says, I'm the Navi, the King should come to me. So the Chesh Baruch Hu has interesting ways of making Shalom. What does he do? He makes Chizkiyo sick and tells Yeshayo, go do Bikur Cholim. Don't do Bikur Cholim. You know, sometimes people don't respect people, but they respect mitzvahs. So, Chizkiyo is sick. So, all right, fine, go do Bikur Cholim. So Yeshayo shows up. And what does Yeshayo tell Chizkiyo? Never do this on a Bikur Cholim visit. You're going to die. Right? That's what he tells Chizkiyo. Chizkiyo says, why? So again, he said, the Gemara outlines this whole exchange. So Chizkiyo says, because you never had children. To which again, Chizkiyo responds, I saw b'nevuah that my son's going to go out and be a rasha. To which Yeshayahu says something amazing. Bahadei kavshei d'rachmana lamalach. Why are you getting involved in God's business? It's not true. It's not your business is to be a normal person. Get married, have a family. If your son becomes Rosh, or your son becomes a tzaddik, that's between your son and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Don't play God. To which Chizkiyo responds, okay, Chizkiyo has a great idea. What's his great idea? He suggests the shidduch. A shidduch with whom? Yeshayahu's daughter. To which Yeshayahu says, I'm sorry, as I already told you, when I walked in, you're going to die. It's too late for you. Right? You're done. To which Chizkiyo, the Gemara says, Chizkiyo responds, Chizkiyo, remember, was a descendant of David HaMelech. He says, Kach mikublani mi beis avi abo. I have a Masorah from my Zedis, from David HaMelech. Afilu cherev chada munachas al tzavaro shal adam. Even if there is a sharp sword against the neck of a person, al yimana a person should never think that they are beyond salvation. Yeshayahu is swayed by the argument. Chizkiyo married Yeshayahu's daughter, and their son was
Menashe.
Right, the longest serving monarch in the Malchus, 55 years he was the Melech. for 33 of it the Rasha, for 22 of it tried to be a Baal Tshuva, but he had done so much bad that he cannot dial back. So it's interesting, by the way, Chizkiyahu was right and Chizkiyahu was wrong. He saw Benavua that he was going to have a son who was a Rasha. What he was unable to see Benavua was what? That his son would become a Baal Tshuva. Which is really quite fascinating. He had enough nevuah to see that his son was going to be a rasha, but not enough nevuah to see that his son was capable of change. Which is really, again, a lot of things that we could talk about for the different. So here's what happened. Here's what happened. Chizkiyahu had the capacity and the personal righteousness to be able to be the Mashiach, but because he made this mistake, then ultimately, again, that cost him the messianic ship, right? And he was unable to become the Melech HaMashiach. So it's fascinating to me. It's fascinating. Let's go on this journey together for just a moment. So out of all the tzaddikim, so Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is apparently saying, I'm going to be accompanied to the world to come. And who's going to accompany him to the world to come? Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Chizkiyahu Melech Yehuda. So Chizkiyahu, what does Chizkiyahu represent? Based on that, what does Chizkiyahu represent to you? Excellent. Exactly the words I was looking for. Missed opportunity. Chizkiyahu could have been the Melech HaMashiach, but he lost it. Yes?
So, I know that they're like, depending on who you will buy, no, pretty sure everyone knows by this, but it's still going to be with your own Mashiach comes. But I still don't understand, if Chizkiyahu is Mashiach, then how could he have a son
who's such a Rasha? That happens all the time. Oh, you're asking how did that nevuah? That I don't know. Anything to do with nevuah and Mashiach, I can't answer. I don't know. Maybe that was the nevuah that he saw because he wasn't a Mashiach. I don't know. And first of all, there will still be Risham when Mashiach comes also. Right? Otherwise, because there's Bechira when Mashiach comes. So if there's Bechira, that means you could become a Rasha. So I guess you could be a Rasha in the Messianic era. So it's harder to be a Rasha because it's going to be such a Gilui Hashchina. It's going to be such a revelation. You see, now it's easier to be a Rasha because God is not as apparent. In the Messianic era, Kodesh Baruch Hu's presence will be more apparent, so it'll be harder to sin. But that Bechira is still there. So Chizkiyahu represents this missed opportunity, this dramatically missed opportunity. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai could relate to that as well. Why does Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai relate to missed opportunities? You remember the story? Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, remember, again, operates when? When does he rise to prominence? Specifically, what time period?
The very end of the Roman
Empire. Right? The end of the Second Temple era. Right? Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, remember again, he is the ranking sage in Yerushalayim when the Romans have besieged Yerushalayim. Remember this story. Rabbi Yochanan, so remember again, there's a conflict. A conflict between the Rabbanon and the Bar Yonim. How should we engage the Romans? The Bar Yonim wanted to what? They wanted to fight. You've learned this story, you know? The Bar Yonim wanted to fight. The Rabbanon wanted to negotiate. What did the Bar Yonim do?
They burnt down
the stars. Remember again, this is Kalva Savua, Nachdiman Ben Gurion, Ben Sittis HaKeses, the three richest men in Yerushalayim. There was enough oil, enough wood, enough grain to support them for years. We can work through diplomacy. They burnt down everything. Yerushalayim is thrust into immediate famine, and the Bar Yonim feel good. It's going to get everybody to fight. What does Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai do? Remember this story. The only way to get out of Yerushalayim was how? Bar Yonim were guarding the entranceways. If you're dead. Because again, the Bar Yonim at least had enough respect for the entranceway, or I should say for the city of Yerushalayim, they wouldn't bury, we don't bury the dead in Yerushalayim itself. That's why again, we go to Har HaZeisim. That's the closest cemetery outside of the walls of Yerushalayim. Still in the municipality, still in the city of Yerushalayim, but outside of the walls. So as Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, you know the story. He fakes his death, right? He puts a decomposing animal carcass underneath his bed, right? So that there's a smell of like a rotting corpse. He's transported out. What happens after he transports out? Ta-da! He pops out of the coffin. And who's standing right there? Vespasian. Vespasian at this point in time is the commander of the Roman legions. Vespasian was very taken by Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, very taken by his bravery, by his wisdom. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai also tells Vespasian that he's going to become the next Caesar. And in fact, again, as Vespasian, Rabbi Yochanan, and Zakkai are talking to each other, a courier comes from Rome, says the Caesar died, the Roman Senate confirmed that you are the new Caesar, Mazel Tov. This all happens as Vespasian is talking to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. So Vespasian says, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, you clearly are a very special man. Tell me what you want. Tell me what you want and I'll give it to you. So remember again, what does Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai ask for? Number one, King Liyavna v'chachamel. Number two, Shushilta de Rabbi Gamliel, preserve the Davidic line. And number three, excellent, doctor for Rabbi Tzadok. Right, those are the three things. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai comes back to Yerushalayim, and what kind of welcome does he get? You are a fool. That's what they said. Rabbi Akiva said it to him. You are a fool. What did you do? HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave you a golden opportunity. You could have told Vespasian, I have one request. Turn your army around. Go home. Rabbi Akiva says, what's the matter with you? What's the matter with you? You could have saved us. Remember again, 1.5 million Jews are slaughtered when Yerushalayim falls to the Romans. We often think, you know, when we think about the Romans, we think about the structure of the Beis HaMikdash. It's very important to understand the Beis HaMikdash is a building. Buildings could always be rebuilt. When we mourn the Churban, we mourn the loss of Klal Yisrael. The Beis HaMikdash represents a sense of achdus, a sense of national intactness. That is all lost when the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed. So Rabbi Akiva and the other Rabbanan, they gang up Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. What did you do, you fool? You could have saved us all. What does Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai answer? Tafasta meruba, lo tafasta. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, listen, you know what? Here's what I was scared about. I was scared that I would ask Vespasian for something dramatic, and what would he say? No. Now, you can't assume that Vespasian is going to say, no, I can't give you that, but what else? What else do you want? Right? A man like Vespasian, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, does not know. You get one chance. You get one chance. And I couldn't risk using that chance on something that Vespasian would not give me. So instead, what did I do? I preserved Torah by sparing the Rabban, the Sanhedrin that was in Yavne. I preserved Mashiach by making sure that the Davidic line and Rabbi Tzadok. Rabbi Tzadok was an indispensable part of the rabbinic framework also to help rebuild in the aftermath of Churban. So what I did is I ensured our survival after the Churban. Who was right? Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai or Rabbi Akiva? See, we don't know. Who knows? Could it have been that had Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai asked Vespasian to turn his army around, Vespasian would have said yes? It's possible. It's also possible that Vespasian that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai would have ended up empty-handed and with nothing. We don't know. Understand how this must have haunted Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai until his dying day. On one hand, you're the man that saved Klal Yisrael. You saved Torah. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai saved Torah. Had Yavne been destroyed, had the Sanhedrin been wiped out, had the Mesorah been disrupted, who knows what? Well, we know Klal Yisrael can't exist without a Mesorah. Can't exist without a Torah. We can't exist without religious leadership. Who knows what would have happened? But maybe you could have saved Am Yisrael. 1.5 million lives could have potentially been saved. And so Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai does not know, did he make the right decision or not? So amazingly enough, as he's about to draw his last breath, he says, who's going to accompany me to the afterlife? Who's going to accompany me? Chizkiyahu Melech Yehuda. Because he and I have a lot to talk about. Because he maybe also could have been the Messianic Redeemer. He also could have been the agent of salvation. But circumstances were such that he didn't become it. I could have also been the potential agent of salvation. Did I make the right decision? Not make the right decision? And perhaps this is what's happening in the Gemara. When Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says that there are two paths in front of me, one to Gan Eden, one to Gehenna. I can't imagine that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was afraid of going to Gehenna for his Averus. Right, everybody sins. But Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was the Gadol Hador, and he knew what he did. He knew how he preserved Klal Yisrael. But perhaps what the Gemara is trying to tell us is as follows. Gehenna is not simply a place where you go for atonement for your sins. Because in tzadik ba'aretz, right, there's not even the most righteous of people commit averus. The scariest part of facing din v'cheshbon after 120 is not your averus. What's the scariest part of facing God after 120? What's the scariest thing that you could possibly hear from the Ribbono Shel Olam after 120? The scariest word that God could say to you? You could have been more. Great job. Good job, Shkoyach, right? Solid. Solid life. Solid 120 years. Let's talk about your accomplishments. But by the way, let me show you what you could have been. Let me show you who you could have been. Let me show you what you could have accomplished in this world. That's Gehenom. Gehenom is where you see what you could have done. But remember, at that point in time, by the time you see it, it's too late. There's nothing more to do. You lived your life. And by the way, you did great. You did beautifully. You did wonderfully. Accomplished wonderful things. But there's so much more you could have been. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, now that I'm leaving this world, there are two paths in front of me. Gan Eden is the path that you go if you lived your life in the way you were supposed to and you maximized the potential you had. And Gehenom is where you have to go ahead and account for the fact that you might have done great, but you could have done so much better. So it turns out that Gehenom, at the end of the day, Gehenom is where you must face the reality that you underperformed. So two different Gehenom constructs. One, a Gehenom construct where I'm going ultimately again to seek atonement for my averos. The second, and they're not mutually exclusive, the second Gehenom construct, ultimately again, where it's not as much about facing my averos. We all sin. I can't understand. There's going to have to be kapara. There's going to have to be tahara. There's going to have to be a cleansing for my averos. I got that. But the Gehenom experience is the existential, painful experience of recognizing that although I did okay, I could have been so much more. That's what Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was afraid of. And that's why he feels that none other than Chizkiah Melech Yehuda potentially will escort him to this next stage of life. We'll stop over here for today. We're going to spend one more class, Meir Shalom, on Monday on Gehenom. Then we'll close out this unit.